The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Since today was Shushan Purim, and I'm sure everyone is still holding a little by the celebrations from last night, I'd like to spend this evening on a few observations on the Megillah Esther. The Megillah begins, Vayhi bimei Achashverosh, Hu Achashverosh HaMelech, Mehudu v'ad Kush, Sheva v'esrim u'mei HaMedino. And it was during the time of Achashverosh, he was the Achashverosh who ruled from Hod v'ad Kush, from India to Africa. The Gemara says this was the entire world, 127 provinces. When did this take place? Rashi tells us, Melech Paras Hoyo, Shemolech Tachas Kedish, Lesef Shim Shona Shel Golos Bovel. The first base of Migdash was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, who was Melech Bovel, the king of Bovel. And then the Jews went into exile, into the Babylonian exile. While they were under the Babylonian exile, there came upon the world scene a second empire, and that was the empire of Porus Umodai, Persian Median Empire. This empire went to war against Babel, against Babylonia, and they defeated the Babylonians, and they became the world conquerors. And they were to remain the world conquerors until the Greek Empire under Alexander the Great would defeat them. The king of the Median Persian Empire was Kadesh, Cyrus the Great. Before him was Darius Harishan. There were two. He was the first one. And when they defeated Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, so they took over the exile of the Jews. And this is how the Jews ended up under the thumb of the Porus Umodai. Achashverosh became the king after Kadesh, after Cyrus the Great. And this was 70 years after the destruction of the first base of Migdash, 70 years after the beginning of this exile. Fact is, the Gemara brings that there was a prophecy that it would last for 70 years, this exile. And in the 70th year, in accordance to their calculation, that they saw that the return to Eretz Yisrael did not take place yet in the rebuilding of the base of Migdash. So this gave them reason to believe that Jews would not be returned to Israel. And therefore they became very haughty and very carefree, and he started to exploit certain things which he had captured from the Beis HaMikdash, for example, the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, and the clothing, the garments of the Kohanim. And in the great party feast that he had, he displayed some of them, and he used some of them. At any rate, so this took place 70 years after the exile began. This is how Mordechai and Esther ended up in Shushan. It's not too far away, because Babylonia is in the area of Iraq, and Shushan is in the area of Iran. So many of the Jews were taken to the area of Iraq, and then from there they went into Shushan. This is what the Megillah tells us a little later, where it states, in Pasuk Beis Vav hasher haglo miYerushalayim im agaylo hasher haglaso im Yechonyo melech Yehuda hasher haglo Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel. That Mordechai and Esther came to Shushan because they were in that golus, they were in that exile from Bavel to Shushan. The Gemara brings and the Medrash that we mentioned this last Wednesday night, that there's a capital Tehillim, Tehillim Chof Beis, Lamnatzeach Hayeles HaShachar, which the Gemara says Esther wrote. And Hayeles HaShachar, there's very various interpretations in it, but one is, it refers to the female Ayol, a female deer, and it's speaking of the deer of the very early morning, right before the dawn. So the Gemara says that this golus was a very dark golus, doubly dark, which is right before dawn, because during the day you have the sun, at night you have the moon and the stars, but right before dawn you don't have the sun and you don't have the moon and the stars. And there was a double darkness here for two reasons. First of all, the darkness of Ahasuerus and the darkness of Haman, and secondly, it was a double golus because Jews were exiled from Yerushalayim into Babel by Nebuchadnezzar, and then from Babel they were exiled again to Persia by the Persians. So it was a double golus. Mora brings also another interpretation in Masechta Yoma Daf Chof Tes, which also gives us an idea as to when this is taking place. It says that Esther was called Ayeles HaShachar, the deer right before the dawn. Why? So the Gemara says, Ma Shachar Seif Kol HaLailo, Af Esther Seif Kol HaNisim. Just like the right before the dawn is the end of the night, so the story of Esther is the last of the great miracles to take place to Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara says, Vayikra Chanukah. Chanukah happened later, because Chanukah happened during the time of the Greeks in the second Beis HaMikdash. It's after they returned to Eretz Yisrael and rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash, and they were there for several hundred years. Then the Greeks invaded. That was the time of the Matisho and the Maccabees. So the Gemara says, Vayikra Chanukah, why do you call Esther the last of all of the miracles? Chanukah came later. So the Gemara says, Nitin Lichtev Kormino. We're speaking about the last of the miracles which were written in the Kisvei HaKodesh. The last of the miracles which were incorporated in the Tanakh that we have. And that was Esther. Because the Megillah is Esther, the Megillah is part of the Kisvei HaKodesh, it's part of the Ksuvim, it's part of the Tanakh, the 24 books that we have of the written Torah. Chanukah, there's nothing written about it in the official Tanakh. Yeah, we have stories and so forth, Midrashim, but there's nothing written in the official Tanakh. So therefore, the last of all of the miracles which were to be written in the Tanakh was Esther, and that's why it's called Ayeles HaShachar. Just as the Shachar is right at the end of the night, Esther also was at the end of the miracles to be written in the Tanakh. Then it states that he made this great banquet, and also Vashti. Vashti gam Vashti amalko osas amishtei nashim beis amalchus asher amelach achashverosh. Vashti also made this a banquet for the women. Who was Vashti? Vashti was his queen. But the Gemara tells us she was a Mucheses, she had great ancestry, she was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. And therefore, she played a special role in the life of Ahasuerus, because Ahasuerus himself was not born into royalty. But his queen was, being the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of the Babylonians. Then it tells us that they drank a lot during these parties. Bashasiach hados einaynes ki kein yisad ha-melech ha-kol rab be-yisrael asis ki tzoyin ish v'ish They served everyone wine, and they served everyone wine in beautiful goblets. And the wine was kedosh, the way it should be. So Gemara says, what does it mean, the wine is the way it should be? They served everyone wine which was older than he was. If a man was 30 years old, they gave him wine that was 31 years old. If he was 60 years old, they gave him wine that was 61 years old. This is what it means, Ashisiyah Kados. That it was wine that the way it should be served. We'll go into this in a minute, what it means a little more. On the seventh day, when the king was joyful, his heart was joyous with wine. He said to the seven of his council that he would always discuss his cabinet, his ministers that he would discuss his problems with. You notice the first one is Mahuman. Then also Harvona was there. Harvona is mentioned at the end of the Megillah. He's the one who said that Haman one built gallows in order to destroy Mordechai, who saved the king's life. The first one mentioned is Mahuman. The Mordechai tells us this Mahuman is Haman. So he was one of the ministers, and he was mentioned first. And they took counsel. When did they take counsel? After drinking for 7 days, they became very merry and very frivolous, and they had a discussion amongst themselves. See, from where do the most beautiful women come from? He had ministers there representing the entire world. So some said from Modai, and others said from Poras, from Persia. So Ahasuerus said, I have a queen that she's not from Modai and she's not from Poras. She's from Babel. Kazdim. Babel was known as Kazdim. That's where Abraham had come from. And she's more beautiful than all of your women. So they said, prove it. Bring her out and let us look at her. So this is what they had a meeting about. And they decided, Lohobis Vashti Amalka Livne Amela Becheser Malchus, that they should bring Vashti out with a crown. She refused to come. And she became also very angry, and she insulted the king. And she said that, how dare you treat me in this manner? If you're not royalty, I am royalty. And my grandfather, he could drink barrels of wine and not act like you. You drink a little wine and look how you act. And this is why Varu, he became very, very angry. Now the Gemara says that it says, Vayibayim Ashvi, it was the seventh day. What does it mean to bring out it was the seventh day? So the writers of the Megillah, who were Mordechai and Esther, they wrote the Megillah with great wisdom and great depth. They wanted to teach us the difference between a non-Jew, the nations of the world, an idolater, and a Jew. Jews also drink on the seventh day, Shabbos. It's a mitzvah to drink wine. It's a mitzvah to make kiddush. What happens when Jews drink on the seventh day? Then they go to shul, and they say shirim v'sish boches. They sing and praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What happens when the idolaters drink? They get into a whole discussion, who has the most beautiful wife, and bring her out so we can gaze at her. So the Megillah is bringing out to us to teach us what's the difference between a Jew and idolater. So the Maral explains, because the Gemara says on wine, nichnas yain v'yotza sod, that when someone drinks wine, secrets of the person start to go out. He talks. And why is this? It's a very deep reason. Wine has the power to go into the innermost parts of a person. Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, said, Yain yisamach levav enosh. Yain brings rejoicing to the heart of man. So we see that it goes into the heart of man, deep into his heart, and brings out a simcha, a rejoicing. Actually, the numerical value of sod, which means secret, is 70, and the numerical value of yain is 70, and 70 years represents a person's life. So we see that wine, together with secrets, together with life, are all tied up with each other. And this is also the reason that we mentioned before that it says that they kados, to serve someone proper wine, means you serve him wine which is older than he is. That's a compliment. Because in Mishnah Masechet Ovah states that aleimed min azekenim ki ilu sheise yain yoshon. If you study from elders, it's as if you're drinking old wine. If you take advice from youngsters, it says as if you're drinking unripe wine. Wine that has not matured yet, which is very very tart and sour. This in general is good to remember. Go to youngsters for advice, that's the same as drinking sour wine. You want to drink good wine, you go to the elders for advice. Aleimin min azakenim ki lusheise yain yoshum. So we see wine is from the great brochus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made. The fact is, wine has so much importance in the world that the Gemara says, Einemrim shira el alayayin. When we sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it must be with wine. When sacrifices were brought in the Beis HaMikdash, wine also was brought on the Mizbeach. When we make an important brocha or do an important mitzvah, sages said, Einemrim shira el alayayin, we must praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu always with wine. Therefore they enacted it should be with a glass of wine. For example, Kiddush on Friday and Shabbos does not have to be with wine. The Kiddush itself, what we say, that we declare that today is Shabbos, we could do it without wine. Except the sages wanted that to give some honor to the declaration of Shabbos. Therefore they said it must be done on a glass of wine. Bris Milah, we can do that without wine. But the sages said, therefore do it with wine. We'll give more honor to it. Chupa v'kiddushin, you can do that without wine. Wine has nothing to do with it. You have to give a ring, the chosen, to the kalah. He has to say he wants to marry her. You have two witnesses. You read the ksuba. What does it have to do with wine? The barocha could be made without wine. Because all of our important mitzvahs, in order to give more honor to it, it should be done with wine. There's a halacha that yain is peiteres kol hamashkim. If you make a brocha on wine, then you don't have to make any brochas on any other drinks or liquids that are served at the meal. Because wine is the most prestigious and encompasses everything else. So wine is something that's taken very seriously by Jews. It's a special brocha that the Almighty gave to the world. We see that good wine is symbolized by the wise, studying from an elder. Wine which is not matured yet, that's like studying from young people that have not matured in their thinking yet. The reason for this is because when you take the grape, it's not just a matter of just squeezing it out. If you take fruit and squeeze it out, you'll get juice. If you take grape and squeeze it out, you'll also get juice, you won't get wine. The process of the wine, of the fermentation, is where you have a power inside the grape, which is totally concealed, and it comes out. This is the power of the fermentation of making wine. It separates itself from the grape, and it comes out, and it becomes wine. And this is the same thing with a person. A person was given a mind, was given a seichel, was given a soul, but it's bound up in the body. The reason why a person cannot think perfectly is because the soul and the mind are locked in the body. The body does not allow him perfect thought. But the more he elevates himself, the more he uplifts himself, raises his soul from the body, the clearer his thinking will be. This is by older people more than by younger people. Therefore, when you learn from the elders, it's like drinking old wine. The longer the wine ferments, so the powers of the wine separate themselves from the grape. That's old wine. If you study from young people, people who have not matured yet and developed their thinking, and their thinking is still very physical, it's like drinking young wine, where the physical powers of the wine have not elevated yet, have not separated themselves from the grape. This is why it was complimentary that when they served the wine, they served a wine which was older than everyone, to compliment him. A man was 40, they gave him wine that was 45 years old. This was a compliment. So the wine has this power, just as the wine itself has a force which is concealed in the grape. I'm not speaking of the juice of the grape. As a force that's concealed in the grape, and through a process it ferments and develops and matures and frees itself from the grape, so does it have this power to go to the heart of a person and brings the innermost parts of him out and brings rejoicing to him and elevates him also. So this is what is meant that nichmas yain yotzasod, that when the yain will go in, the innermost part of a person will come out. And this is why its numerical value is 70, just like a person's life. This represents the person's life. It goes down to the very soul of his life. And wine in particular has this power. And therefore the sages said that when we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a mitzvah or a bracha, it should be with a keshel yain, a cup of wine. Now, naturally, it has to be used with seichel. It cannot be used where a person becomes drunk over it every time he drinks wine. It's supposed to rejoice the person, not make him numb to what's happening. Now we see the difference between the Jew and the idolater. When the Jew drinks, what does he do? The Medrash says he goes to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because it brings out his depth. And the depth, the foundation of a Jew, is close to the Almighty. So this is what it brings out. But when the idolaters drink, what is their foundation? What is their depth? Their depth is immorality, promiscuity. Therefore, when you see the idolaters drink, they get involved in altogether other things. So that's what the Megillah wants to teach us here, that it was on the seventh day, Ketev Lev HaMelech Bayoim, when the king's heart was merry with wine, and we see what they did, and it brought to promiscuity and eventually brought to death, brought to murder. And the difference when Jews come together on their seventh day on Shabbos and they drink. Now it states that the one who was sitting in front when it came to this Eitzah was Mamuchan, Mahuman. What it says Mahuman? That's Homan. There was another name for Homan. This means that he was, and the Gemara brings, that he was the one who pushed this idea to bring Vashti. Little later, after Vashti refused to come and the king got very, very upset, so again they met, he and his council of seven, and they said, what should we do? She's publicly embarrassed the king. States, now the last one was Memuchan. Mora brings Memuchan and Mahuman were the same person. This is all Homan. So before he was the first one and now he's the last one. What happened? Since it was his Eitzah, his counsel that got them into this whole mess, now they were in a mess. Because not to do something was an embarrassment for the king. She publicly embarrassed him. She publicly rebelled against him. On the other hand, to do something, well, they didn't want to do something either. So they were in a mess. It was Haman's counsel that got them into the mess. So they demoted him. They put him down to last. So they got together and they said, what should we do? Now, even though he was last, he answered first. What it says from here, you see, Hedjit Kofatz Beresh. The fool always jumps first to answer. Never you have a few people that you're discussing something with. If there's a fool, he jumps first to answer. A person should always think first and be quiet. Shlema Melech always states that if the fool keeps quiet, Ksil Yechoresh, Yechrash, Chochem Yechoshev, people will think he's wise. But generally the fool talks. So here they demoted him to seventh, but still he was the first one to talk. So Mamuchan got up and he said, not against only the king did he sin, but against all of the ministers of all of the nations, of all of the provinces of the world, of the king's empire. Because now the word will go around that women have a right to insult their husbands and not to listen to them. So he said, therefore he would suggest that we get rid of her and we take the crown from her, and the king should give the crown to the one that he who's better. Actually, there's a Medrash Gemara says that one opinion was that Haman had a daughter and he was hoping that his daughter would become the queen. They listened to Haman's Eitzah and they killed Vashti. It's interesting. The Eitzah of the council that they should bring out the queen so we could gaze at her beauty. And this was promiscuity. This came from Haman. The council that we should kill Vashti, which was murder, this came from Haman. The council later on, that Haman came to Ahasuerus and said, let's lashmi l'harig elabed, we should kill and destroy all of the Jews. This came from Haman. What do we see from here? We spoke about it on Shabbos. We see that Haman, who was from Amalek, the power of Amalek is not only evil, but also that of influencing others to do evil. Where do we see this? Because it states, Asher korcho baderech. Why should we always hate Amalek and destroy them when we have the chance to? Because korcho baderech, kor v'chaim. When Klal Yisrael came out of Egypt, no nation would have ever fought with them. No one would have ever bothered Klal Yisrael, because the entire world saw what the God of Israel did to Egypt. He completely, totally destroyed Egypt with the 10 plagues and with the splitting of the sea and with the killing of their people, and all of their wealth was taken by Israel. When the nation saw this, they were afraid, and they would always remain afraid. Except by Yovah Amalek. Amalek came and made war So korcho means kor v'chaim. There was a hot swimming pool. No one would go near it. Along comes one person and jumps in, even though he skated. But now it can be done. Others will follow. This is what Amalek did. So we see that Amalek has a power not only to defy HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to do evil, but they have a great power to influence others to do evil. And here we see, when it came to the council to bring out Vashti, it was Haman's idea. When it came to the council to kill Vashti, it was Haman's idea. When it came to the council to kill the Jews, this was Haman's idea. The power to influence others to follow. Then the Megillah tells us that after Achar Avori Ma'ila in Perek Beis, after he realized that he had no queen left, and he started to feel very sad, so they advised him that he should look for another queen. He should gather together all of the women of his empire who are beautiful. It tells us Ishu Urdi Hoya B'Shushan Abiro. There was a Jew that lived in Shushan Abiro, and his name was Mordechai Ishimini. He came from the tribe of Binyamin. And Vayi Omenas Adasi Esther Bas Didei. He had a daughter of his uncle, a cousin, who was named Esther. And he took care of her. The Gemara brings that not only he took care of her, Lekochale Levas Lebais. One opinion is he took her as a wife. He married her. And she was very beautiful. It states, Vayomenes Hadassah hi Esther. Gives her two names, Esther and Hadassah. So the Gemara asks, Gemara in Megillah Daf Yud Gimel Omer Aleph, why was she given two names, Esther and Hadassah? Omer Meir, Esther Shma, her real name was Esther. Lomanikra Shma Hadassah, or Shema Tzadikim Shenikra Hadassim. She was called Hadassah because the righteous are referred to as a Hadassah. Hadass is a plant. And Sukkot, when we take the lulav and the esrog, so we take also the Hadassah, that's the myrtle plant. That's the myrtle plant, we take three Hadassahs, and that's a plant which is about a medium height. It's shorter than, it's not as long as the lulav, and it's usually not as long as the arovas either, or the willows. It's a medium height. And what's significant about its identification is that the Gemara says you can identify it because its wooden branch is completely covered by its leaves. It has three leaves coming out of one point, and it's not, the leaves do not come out at one place and then a few inches higher at another place and then a few inches higher at another place, but the leaves come out directly over each other. So the leaves completely cover the wood of the branch. So Remeya says Tzadikim were called Hadassos. And he brings a pasuk from Zechariah, who I made bein Hadassim, Asher b'Metzula. What does this mean? So the explanation is given because the myrtle plant, which is a very nice plant, it's a very pretty plant, it grows right between the crags and the rocks. And you would think that it's growing in such a rocky area, it wouldn't exist there, but it exists. And this is the tzaddikim. Many people think that what's a tzaddik? A tzaddik is someone who has everything perfect. Okay. He lives in an ivory tower. He has plenty of time to daven, and plenty of time to learn, and plenty of time to do mitzvahs, and plenty of money to give tzedakah with. He has no problems. then he's a tzaddik. This is how many people have a picture of what a tzaddik is. It's not so. If you read the stories of all the tzaddikim, I don't think you'll find one that was like that. Not Avraham. Avraham was a fugitive. He had to run from it for his life. They always tried to kill him. He grew up in a total environment of idolatry. He had no teacher. He had no mentor. He had no environment. He had no atmosphere. He had to fight his entire life. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, go, leave this land and go to a land. And there were seven mighty nations in Eretz Yisrael at that time. These nations were head-hunting nations. These were not uncivilized nations. Sheif Chedomim, they were murderers. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Abraham, go to this land that he never was there before and never knew of. And leave any security that you have, leave. And then he was later on, as soon as he came there was a famine, there was nothing to eat, he had to go to Egypt. And then they abducted Sarah, his wife, from him. Later on, he was told to sacrifice his only son. Sasori Nishenis. He was tested 10 times. And Yitzchok and Yaakov always was a fugitive. Yaakov was always running. Yosef grew up in the dungeons of Paray. He was sold by his brothers. And so on and so on. This is the life of a tzaddik. Those who think that a tzaddik lives in a utopia and they're constantly seeking that utopia, they waste their life away, never finding it. The fact is, when Yaakov Avinu went through a life of suffering, he told HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he said, the Almighty that said, when he created the world, he said, it's sufficient now, let him say, it's sufficient of my tzoras. Because he says, all my life I only had tzoras. I had tzoras Esav, I had to run from Esav, he wanted to kill me, my brother. Then I came to Lavan, tzoras Lavan. Lavan cheated me at every turn. Chazal say 100 times he cheated me. I worked 7 years for Rochel, and then he gives me Leah, and then I have to work another 7 years. And then I had the tzora of Dina. Dina was abducted. Then I had the tzora of Rochel. Rochel died in childbirth. And then I had the tzora of Yosef. Yosef disappeared. Then the tzora of Shimon. Shimon disappeared. And then Tzoras Binyamin, they want to take Binyamin down to Egypt now. And he prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, the one that said it's enough, that when he created the world, he said enough. He says, die the Tzoras, he says, it's enough on my Tzoras. And it states on Yaakov, Vayeshev Yaakov, Bikesh Leshev Bishalvat, Yaakov wanted in his older years, he wanted, he said, a little peace and quiet, so I can sit and I can learn. What did he want the peace and quiet for? He wasn't interested in going to some city. He wanted peace and quiet so he could sit and learn and teach his sons and teach people and do mitzvahs. You know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him? He says, BK Shalva, Ve'ilam Azeh. You're looking for peace in this world. Leidai, it's not enough, the great peace that you'll have in the next world. You're looking in this world. You're looking in the wrong place, he told him. This is a lesson people never fail to understand. And this is what he told Yaakov Avinu after a whole life of tzoras. When Yaakov met Paray, and Paray asked him, how old are you? So he told him, I'm so many years old. Ma'at v'royim hem. He says, and I didn't live a great number of years, and they were not good years. Not good years. Years of suffering. And Yaakov was the most perfect man. We're called after Yaakov, B'nai Yaakov, B'nai Israel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you want peace in this world? It's not enough what you'll have in the next world. The Gemara says, when is it considered that a person rests? Neyach nafshe. Says, ha-meisim chofshi min ha-mitzvus. Those who die, they're the ones who become free of the problems of this world. But life is constant toil, life is constant challenges. So people who think that righteous life means like, you know, like Lahavdil, you have other religions that they believe what's a righteous life. You go up to the to the Himalayas. If you go up to Himalayas, about 15,000 feet up, there the monasteries start. 16,000 feet more. Isolated places where they can sit and meditate. The convents and so forth. This we don't find such things. Every tzaddik that we know of was on the front lines. The front lines. They bring once a story that a man came back from war. He met a sage. He asked him, where are you coming from? He says, I'm coming from a war. I'm returning home for some peace. So he told him, you're coming from a small war and you're going to a greater war. The war that you're returning from, that's between man and man, that's a small war. The war that man fights with his Yetzer Hara, with his the force of evil which is found in the world and in himself, that's a war that goes on every minute. That war is only over when he dies. So don't think that this is life for a tzaddik. Tzaddik is always on the front lines, and the greater the tzaddik, the more difficulties. So this is why it states that Hatzadikim Nikroim al Shema Hadassah. Because the Hadassah is a perfect plant, it's perfectly straight, it's perfectly in dimension, perfectly green. And if you look at the leaves, they're all perfect. And where is it found? Benachrakim. It's found amongst the stones, amongst the rocks. That's where it grows. That's where it develops. Not in a greenhouse, not in a hothouse, not in the most beautiful climate in the world. And why was Esther called this? Esther was the epitome of it. Because where did she acquire her greatness? She didn't acquire her greatness in Chasbi Sholem, in some monastery, isolated part of the world. She acquired her greatness in the palace of Ahasuerus, living right in the palace of the idolater, forced to live with him in the source of Tumah, the source of impurity. This is where Esther became a tzaddikah, became righteous. That's why it states, "Hi Hadassah." From here, a person must realize, it's very important, that if he thinks, see, it's the Eitzah of the Yetzer Hara, the counsel of the Yetzer Hara, that it comes to the person and say, and tries to convince him that if things would be different, then he would be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right now you can't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu because your particular type of business doesn't allow you to. But one day, after you'll succeed at this business and you'll have more time, then you'll have time to be closed on Shabbos and be closed on Yantif, and you'll have time to learn or whatever it might be. Or now you don't have enough money to do what you want to do for the mitzvahs. One day you'll have more, you'll be able to do it. The person will examine, he'll see the Yetzer Hara is always coming with these claims. And a person who listens lets life go right through his fingers. Right through his fingers. Because the challenge is not to do tomorrow, to do today. Everyone was given a job to do today. And he must do the best he can today under the present circumstances and not worry about tomorrow. That's what this teaches us. Tzadikim anikroim al shem hadas, because this was the nature of the Hadassah. And this is a great illustration of what Esther was. Who could have had more difficult circumstances than Esther Amalka? Then it brings Reb Yehuda Aimer, Hadas Shmo Lamanikra Shmei Esther Vimnei Shaisa Masteresis Dvareho. Really, her name was Hadassah. See, the first one said her name was Esther, except she was called Hadassah, because that's the name of the tzaddikim, of the righteous. Now Reb Yehuda says the converse. Really, her name was Hadassah. Why was she called Esther? Because Esther means to be secret, to conceal. She was Masteres Es Dvoreho. She concealed her words. Where do we see she concealed her words? Ein Esther Mageres Baladet Toves Amo. She refused to tell the king what nation she comes from and what family she comes from. Why did she refuse to tell the king what nation she comes from, what family she comes from? Because Cain Siva Allah Mordechai, this is what Mordechai commanded her. Why? Because Mordechai was afraid that if Ahasuerus would know what family and nation she was coming from, he would keep her and he wouldn't send her away. And Mordechai was hoping that he would send her away. Why wouldn't he send her away? Because she came from the family of Shaul HaMelech, King Saul. She was from the tribe of Binyamin, like Mordechai, and she came from the family of King Saul, Shaul HaMelech. And Ahasuerus needed royalty. He himself was not born into royalty, and this bothered him. And Vashti, therefore, was his prize, because she was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. Now that Vashti wasn't there, he needed royalty. Man did don't tell. What was so great that she didn't tell? What was so great that she didn't tell is because here a woman was taken into the king's court. She was elevated to become queen of an entire world. And Ahasuerus offered her everything in the world at her feet if she would only tell him where she came from. You could imagine the wealth and the splendor and the honor that was being offered to her if she would tell. And still it states, Ein Esther Magedis. She refused to tell. When she called Ahasuerus, she asked him to come to a party that she was making for him and Haman. So at that party, Ahasuerus says, what can I do for you? I'll give you up to half the kingdom. So she said, come tomorrow, you and Haman, to a party, and then I will do what you've asked. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? I will tell you then what nation I come from. And at that party she revealed it. She revealed that she comes from the nation of the Jews, and Haman is trying to destroy her. It also states, at that second party, it states that Ahasuerus said twice, it says, he said to Esther. We must realize what kind of great tyrant and monarch Ahasuerus was. I mean, he ruled the entire world, the Gemara says. Now, he was such a monarch that even to Esther, his own queen, he would never speak to directly. He always spoke to, the Gemara brings, through a third party. Wouldn't speak to directly, because she was a commoner as far as he knew. Only after he found out where she comes from, there it states, he said twice to Esther, and the Gemara learns from there, he spoke directly to her. So this was a greatness that she never revealed who she came from, where she came from. This was a power of Nister, to conceal, and therefore her name was Hadassah, but she was called Esther. Esther means to conceal. The Gemara brings that she, coming from Binyamin, this means she came from Shaul. But being Shaul also was a very private and modest person. A very modest person. When he met her, he was looking for the donkeys. His father sent him to go find some lost donkeys. And when he came and he found the lost, he went to look for the lost donkeys, and they were in a city where he heard that Shmuel Hanovi, Samuel the prophet, lived there. So they went to see Shmuel. Maybe he could give him counsel where the donkeys are. Meanwhile, Shmuel told him that you're going to become the king of Israel. And he says, you shouldn't talk to me like that. I should become the king of Israel. But he went back to his father. So he gave his father an entire report on the donkeys and never said anything what Shmuel said to him, that he was to become the king of Israel. Because he was a very, very humble, modest person. And she coming from Shaul, so the Gemara says that was that same trait. That of being very modest and very quiet and very inward, very withheld. And they came from Rachel. Binyamin was from Rachel, and Rachel also was like that. Because when Laban was supposed to give Rachel to Yaakov, and then he switched, and he gave Leah instead, Rachel could have told Yaakov immediately. Instead, she refused to tell. So this trait, the Gemara says, ran through these generations, from Rachel to Shaul to Saul to Esther. Then the Gemara brings also, the Meforshim bring that this is what is known as tznius. Many times we get our conception of tznius totally wrong. See, tznius means, the word tznius means, it's difficult to give it an English word, but tznius means private. Person should be very private. Now naturally it means also that a person should be physically modest. But that's only the beginning of it. It doesn't end there. You have people who sometimes are physically modest, but when it comes to talking, when it comes to other things, they're not snooing at all. And that's not tznius. Give you an example. The Gemara says, "Latznuim chokhma." Wisdom goes to the tznuim. It's a pasuk that says, "Atznei aleches im Hashem elokecha." When you walk with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you should walk with tznius. What does this mean? That what you do should be between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and no one else. What you do should be between you and the Almighty. It should be no one else's business. Okay. So this is what tznius means. So it says Esther was a great snooer. Why? Because you see, she could keep a secret. Mordechai told her that I want it should always remain a secret where you come from. And all of the days that she was with Ahasuerus, she never told him. Until finally, when Mordechai told her to tell him to save Klal Yisrael. Therefore it says she was a snooer. This is what snooze is. Now this is another reason why she was called Hadassah. Because the Gemara says the Hadassah is a tznua. Why is it a tznua? Because the leaves cover the entire wood. The wood of the branch is entirely covered by the leaves. So this shows tznius. See, this shows a modesty. This shows a privacy. So therefore she was called Hadassah. Then it says another reason why she was called Hadassah. Benaze Aimer Esther Shmo Velomanikr Shmo Hadassah Bibnesha Isa Beinunis Le Arucha Vele Tzore Ele Beinunis Kahadassah. Benaze says she was called Hadassah because the Hadassah plant is not a short plant and it's not a tall plant. It's a medium-sized plant. Esther also was medium-sized. She wasn't tall, she wasn't short, but she was just medium. And then the Gemara says, Rabbi Shua ben Korchaimah Yerakrek Soh Heiso V'chut Shel Chesed Meishich Olecho. So Machlekes in the Gemara. Interesting Machlekes. If Esther was one of the most beautiful women in the world or not. From the Megillah, what we see, that she definitely was, because Ahasuerus sent his ministers through all 127 provinces of the world to find the greatest beauties of the world, and they came up with Esther. So she definitely was, and according to one opinion in the Gemara, she was from the most beautiful women, not only from the most beautiful women in the world, but from the most beautiful women of creation. The Gemara mentions the most beautiful women of creation. The most beautiful one, it says, was Chava, Eve, the one that the Almighty made himself. Then Sora was one of the most beautiful women of creation. At least three or four most beautiful women of creation. But then there's another opinion that she was not. She definitely was from the extreme beauties, but not, you cannot reckon her as the most beautiful of creation. Molly says, why not? Because her complexion was olive, like the Hadassah. The Hadassah is greenish, and she was called Hadassah because her complexion was a little greenish, it was olive. So this did not disqualify her as a beauty, but no longer can we consider her as the most beautiful woman of creation. Then the Gemara says, so if she had an olive tint, so then why did she win the contest? The Gemara says, Chut shel chesed, meishach alecho. Kodesh Baruch Hu gave her a tremendously pleasing look, a tremendous charm, which attracted Ahasuerus. So now the question is, why is it she was called Hadassah because she had an olive tint? I mean, why did she have the olive tint? And if she did have the olive tint, so why, therefore, would they want to call her Hadassah? Not allowed to give someone a name which is not a complimentary name. And then also, what does the Gemara mean when it says that she was not tall and she was not short, but she was medium like Hadassah? So Maral explains this very well. He says that she was to become the queen of Ahasuerus. Now this doesn't really mean the wife of Ahasuerus, it means the queen. And this means the queen of the entire world, because Ahasuerus was the king of the entire world. And this is an important position. We must have honor for kings, the Gemara tells us. The Gemara says we must have honor for kings. It's a mitzvah to give kovod to malochim. We even make a bracha when we see a king. Not only kings of Israel, but other kings also. They should be good kings. But kingship is something we must have honor. Why? Because amamlich malochim. To be a ruler is a great position. And the Almighty gives out these positions. We must honor it. We must respect it. That's why it brings in this Lamnatseach, in this Kapitel Tillim, which Esther wrote, it brings there that first it says she called Ahasuerus a kelev. When she became so angry, she asked the Kodesh Baruch Hu, why did you leave me with this kelev, with this dog? And then she changes and she calls him a lion, a wild lion. Why did she change? Because she realized that to call him a dog would be dishonorable. Could be he's a mad lion, not a dog. A dog is from, the Gemara says, it's from the most pechusim in abrius. It's from the bottom of the list of creations that the Almighty made. A lion is the melech, is the king of the wild beasts. He could be a murderer. You don't start a fight with a lion. He could be a murderer, but nevertheless, you have to have derechets. You have to have respect for him because he's known as the king of the wild beasts. This is why he roars, to let everyone know that he's the king. So she changed and she said, all right, why did you leave me in the hands of this lion? So for to be a king is a tremendous force, it's a tremendous position. To be a king over the entire world, there were only very few, the Gemara brings, kings that ever reigned over the entire world. So you can imagine what kind of position this is. To be his queen means that you must be a queen over the entire world. So Esther had to be befitting for the position. To be a queen for the entire world means that every nation must be able to identify with you. Gemara brings, for example, the Gemara brings that when the Melech HaMashiach will come, so there's a Gemara that is asking a question, what will be his name? So there are various opinions as to what his name will be. And each rabbi of the Gemara says his name will be, and it happens to be the same name that his own name is. So what's the explanation? What the Gemara means is that everyone will be able to identify with him. A subject has to identify with his king. A king must be his king. A member of one nation does not have to identify with a king of another nation, but he has to be able to identify to his own king. The Melech HaMashiach, that will be the king over the entire world, therefore, must be able to identify with all of his subjects. And every subject must be able to identify with him. That's why everyone called him by his own name. Esther, that was coming into a similar position, therefore would have to be identifiable with all the nations of the world. Therefore, she couldn't be tall, and she couldn't be short. If she was tall, she would identify with nations which were tall but not short. Short with nations which were short but not tall. Therefore, she had to be Beinoni. Mamutza, she had to be just in the middle. And that's why she was called Hadas, because the Hadas is a plant which is just in the middle. And this is why she was given an olive complexion. Because you have people who have all, the peoples of the world are all different colors. People who are very light-complected, people who are red. You have people who are brown, you have people who are black. Mordechai brings that the midpoint color is that of a green. That's the midpoint color. It's not the extremities. Red is an extreme. Black is an extreme. Midpoint is greenish. And the Hadassah has this color, and it has this size, so it's known as a middle point plant. Therefore, she was called Hadassah, because she had these qualities. She had these qualities where the whole world would be able to identify with her. In other words, she was prepared for this position beforehand. So therefore, the opinion, and this opinion in the Gemara, was that her name was Esther, and she was called Hadassah because of these reasons. The hour is getting late, so I think we will have to close here. I hope that everyone had a very freilich Purim, and we should see only simchas in Klal Yisrael.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za, or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.